Yeah, we're now 55 minutes into it, but I think...
I move the consent agenda.
Well, you can't really do that, Warren.
Can't do that now.
Because there's one proviso that the board needs to consent to the regular meeting minutes of July 25th. If the board says, yeah, we don't need to modify... No, it's the agenda, I'm sorry. Thank you, Nathan, your body language I picked up on. It's today's agenda. If anybody wants to modify that agenda, please speak up, because we need to rule on that before we can rule on the consent agenda. Any modifications, questions, whatever? Okay, that passes. Now we can rule on the consent agenda. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye from you?
I said aye.
Very good. Unanimous? Hope you don't have a fairy.
No, I don't.
You and
she does have
Cynthia
a fairy.
And
a 6:30 fairy.
6:30 fairy.
Oh, don't tell her that. Tell him it's like a fly.
Well, then we're going to punt off your report until the end of tonight's meeting. Is that okay? Then please.
You're on. Done.
Please share your report. It's a, you know. I'm going to give an intro here. Your name is Beth Williams-Gigger, right? And you're from Pizan Medical Center, correct?
That's
and
correct.
For many, many years, you've given this wonderful report that gets better every year. So please do so again, Beth.
I don't know if it gets better again. Is this on?
No.
Should you be able to?
Doesn't work.
Okay. Just taking timing out.
Okay, well, hello, commissioners, and thank you for inviting me to come and give the semi-annual report for Peace Island Medical Center. And as I do every 6 months, I report on six categories in the agreement, which include the number of patients served over the reporting period. And just to remind you, the reporting period is January 1st of 2018 through June 30th of 2018. I report on the number of patients served, the healthcare services provided, the number and type of clinical providers that are working at Peace Island, the nature and results of quality initiatives, patient experience indicators, and the financial viability of the operation. So on the first page are the numbers of patients served, and this is getting smaller as the years go by, but it starts in 2014 and runs through January, June of 2018, and you can see that all numbers in all of these categories are going up of the significant increase in this reporting period includes lab tests, the cancer care specialty and infusion care, and our urgent walk-in care. And just to remind you that the urgent walk-in care in the emergency department is for lower acuity visits. A lot of people know about this now and are using the emergency department at times when the clinic isn't opened or at any time, and they can be triaged at lower acuity. That's level 4 and 5. Then I was always asked by the board.
Lower acuity is level 1, 2, and 3. Higher acuity is level 4 and 5.
No, not for billing purposes.
Oh, for billing purposes, the other way around.
Yeah, and this is why the patients were concerned about lower acuity.
Good.
Okay, and that the I was also asked to give a percentage by zip code so that we know who in the district is using our services. And 89% of the patients during this reporting period are from our district. 5% are from the other islands, Orcas, Lopez, and Shaw, and 6% from outside the county. Healthcare, and these are pretty much the same reports every time, and I've just highlighted some of the things that are new and different about this reporting period are different. Just the healthcare services provided, of course, our emergency room, open 24/7 for all residents and district visitors. Same day appointments available in the primary care clinic, that continues. Peace Island Medical Center is still designated a level 4 trauma center. PMAC is also available for island appropriate admissions in our inpatient. These inpatient admissions are supported by 24/7 hospitalist care and discharge planning. Might just note that placement to skilled nursing on the island is an issue. When we have a patient in the hospital and they require a skilled nursing admission, it's quite a feat to find the most available facility for the family and for the patient's insurance. So that's ongoing, and that's something that the district, I think, is going to explore later on in the year, along with the rest of the community. Primary care the primary care clinic operates with medical, Peace Health Medical Group physicians, and those are family medicine and internal medicine, regular business hours 8 to 5. The available services include the comprehensive family medicine and internal medicine services. We do Coumadin monitoring for patients that are on that prescription, diabetic education. We have our integrated behavioral health case management and telepsychiatry go along with primary care. Continue with that. We continue to address the needs of all vulnerable populations by home visits when they're needed by our primary care providers. We had a schedule set aside for the nurse practitioner. It turns out that if that patient is a patient of any one of the doctors and they need to go into a home visit, they will, depending on their schedule. So we just schedule it in when it's needed.
Can I ask a question? Do you guys mm-hmm. coordinate the paramedicine with their home visits?
Not yet, but we do discuss.
They're interrelated.
Yeah, they're very interrelated.
Yeah, so they're interrelated for sure.
Yeah.
We do the medical management piece or the medical intervention piece, but usually it's after the paramedicine's already gone out and investigated the scene, or we brought a patient to their attention.
That's as long as it's happening.
It's happening more than you think. Telepsychiatry, integrated behavioral health, and primary care, again, that's ongoing. We have the University of Washington psychiatrist and the follow-up services that go along with that. And as I say, that is gaining in volume. We have visiting specialty medical care, the same as we've had over the last reporting periods. Obstetrics and gynecology with Robert Prinz and Nadine Burton-Foyce from Fidalgo Medicine and Anacortes. They've been doing that for a number of years, and they come once a month, each one of them, with their deliveries at Island Hospital. Tamari Boz is a midwife on Oricus. She succeeded Melinda Milligan, and so she continues to have a schedule once a month here in the clinic. We have a visiting cardiologist from Peace Health Medical Group 2 days a month. They come out and see cardiology patients in consult and do things like EKG monitoring and different heart tests with their devices. Oncology, Dr. Robert Raich is there every Monday, and patients are their oncology treatment plans are then carried out the rest of the week. David Olson is the ear, nose, and throat specialist that's been coming over here from Bellingham for almost 10 years now, and he comes monthly as well. Telepsychiatry with Dr. Foch from University of Washington and another behavioral health provider out of the Peace Health Medical Group in Bellingham. So they actually provide services 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and they're full. Pediatric consultation, about once a month we have Dr. Stephen Ban, who's a pediatrician from Bellingham. He comes out and we'll see patients that are specifically referred for pediatric, maybe a little higher concern on some of the patients' families. And Andrea Zatikas is our chaplain. I don't know if some of you have met her, but she assists patients and families and with their spiritual and emotional needs, and she has a ongoing, she comes out every 2 weeks, she has an ongoing schedule of patients, particularly if they have grieving issues or things like that, that of the spiritual nature. She always has a full schedule. She's wonderful. She works with our staff as well. Outpatient surgical services, they are continuing to be scheduled at Peace Island, and we have orthopedic consults. Our orthopedic specialist, Dr. Krusniak, is very busy. He started out once a month, then twice a month, then three times a month, and now four times a month. And he literally has a full panel of patients when he's out here, at least 20, 25 patients. So lots of ortho follow-up and things that happen. And he does some of his same-day surgeries just once a month. We have gastroenterology and outpatient GI outpatient procedures once a month. Maybe even twice a month, but right now it's just once a month. That's Peace Health Medical Group, GI specialists that are coming out. We have general surgery with Dr. Michael Pietro, who comes out once a month and does consults, and then as needed, he does various things. They all have to be same-day surgeries and not anything with general anesthesia. No changes in our diagnostic imaging services in this reporting period. We still have CT, MRI twice a month, and they're talking about even adding an additional day. The MRI comes out twice a month on a Saturday and for scheduled MRIs, and that's convenient. A lot of the patients are elderly, and it's tough to get off the island for this procedure as long as it's scheduled. And they're getting to the volume where they may be adding an additional day, maybe in our higher volume months. General ultrasound with some limited vascular and endocardiology is provided for 4 days a week and as needed. Bone densitometer, EKG, treadmill, and digital mammography every Tuesday.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed on ultrasound, outpatient ultrasounds, which and inpatient. Now, inpatient are the ones in OBS beds. Where does the emergency department ultrasound usage show up on this chart?
I think it would be lumped. Are you talking about the overall numbers?
You're right.
I think any ultrasound procedure that's billed out would be on this.
But so they have it as inpatients. We don't have many inpatients. I'm not there anymore. Inpatients, are those emergency department numbers?
Well,
really an outpatient department.
No, you can see there's only two during this reporting period. These would be somebody that was admitted that needed an ultrasound and went in and was taken into an ultrasound. Yeah.
And what is the hour coverage? We have one ultrasonographer.
Mm-hmm. She's 4 days a week. And she's on call, but she's not mandated to be on call. So if she's otherwise occupied.
Kim is wonderful about coming in. But does she get. At what number would we start looking? And then she has kids and sick days and school and gets vacations. How do we cover that the rest of the time? Because that is a big tool in the
If she's on vacation, then they send us an ultrasound tech from Bellingham that fills in.
But they're only here 4 days.
Yeah,
the other 3 days, there's no ultrasound.
Yep, still just 4 days.
Okay. I have a concern there, just to let you know.
Yeah. Where was I? Diagnostic lab services. They noticed the increase in labs, so I asked our lab tech to give an overview of the last 6 months. She basically said there's a 43% increase in unscheduled night hours during January through March. So patient comes in the middle of the night and needs lab, they call in the lab techs. The lab techs are, they're not hanging around down in the lab if there's no patients, but they're called in. So they've had quite a busy time here. She states what this is. The April through May also demonstrated the sharp increase in additional of 112 call hours over their historical benchmark, making it half of 2018. There's their heaviest use of the lab by the emergency department to date. So they're busy people, and when there's a lot of people in the emergency department or in the inpatient unit, they're called a lot to do lab work and process specimens. Our pharmacy services, as you know, they're still staffed by our local full-time pharmacists. We're fortunate to have that. In February of 2018, the pharmacy registered with the Washington State Poison Control as an antidote resource for many antidotes used in the emergency department, including naloxone and Narcan for drug overdose. In early June, the pharmacy team completed a trauma room medication dispensing system with the resuscitation room in the emergency department. This medication system allows medications to be securely located near the emergency department patients, improving safety and patient care. So that was a good improvement in there. Medications are all kept in what's called the Pyxis machine. And Warren may know more about how you get about there, but it's available. From the pharmacies, not open 24 hours, but just regular business hours. Our Peace Island volunteers, I always include them because they are a going concern. They have over 300 members in their membership. Not all of them serve in the hospital. Not all of them are badged and background checked. The ones that serve in the hospital are. They have background checks just like all the staff, and they help out, particularly on surgery days and that kind of thing, in checking people in and doing the wheelchair back and forth. They have about 5 to 7 major fundraising events every year, and some of you probably know about that. There's going to be one coming up on Sunday where they are going to be participating in the concourse, the car show, and they do raise money for things. We're hoping to get our volunteers kind of involved in an outreach program, and during my next reporting period, I'll be able to probably report more on that. The other section is number and types of clinical providers, and you all know about our regular and routine primary care providers. We did add Dr. Lauren Olson back in December, and she's been working and very busy now since December. We added Ruth Fothergill, who lives on Lopez, and she is family medicine, but also trained in gerontology, which has been a really great thing. We've been kind of assigning her some of our special patients. She joined us in June, so the beginning of this reporting period, and I can tell you, she's busy. I've included her bio page. Basically, she comes to Friday Harbor from Minneapolis, Minnesota, lives on Lopez. She volunteered at Free Community Clinic. She's been actively involved in research and on hip fracture. She speaks Spanish. She loves to teach and mentor. She's participated in training of family doctors, education, medical students, mentoring high school students that are interested in healthcare careers. Like I said, she enjoys life with her husband of 35 years on Lopez Island, has 2 adult sons. She's wonderful, and if you get a chance to meet her, she's just really been busy since she started in June. We've kept her schedule pretty full. Dr. Bishop has been on a sabbatical and will be on a sabbatical till October, so having Dr. Fothergill and Olson in the primary care clinic has added a lot more capacity during the summer months anyway.
Is she a certified Spanish interpreter or just speaks Spanish?
She just speaks Spanish. She's certified. We have that
equipment. Machine,
Emergency department. You know about the emergency department. We haven't added anybody new. We do have, I mentioned Carrie Matthews coming on board, and she did come on board in August. Now lives here permanently on the island with her family, her delightful family. And the University of Washington Emergency Medicine Rotation, this is kind of a special thing. We do are privileged to host 2 of these University Emergency Medicine residents, University of Washington residents, on a monthly basis for the summer months of June, July, and August. So we did have 2 in June, we had 2 in July, and we have 2 in August. And during our peak periods of time, I would say that the emergency room physicians will be sorry that when they're gone, because they've been able to lend quite an additional hand to the operation in there. And they've been excellent, too.
My information is that Dr. Heiner, who was a big part of starting that program, has given notice that he will be leaving and not practicing here anymore.
Oh, I haven't noticed. I haven't heard that.
So my question is, and I'd like to know the answer to this, is that going to affect the residency program?
Yes,
I think the residency program brings a lot, and how can we stabilize that?
I don't know, but you've just given me some news I didn't know. So that's unfortunate, because this
is a great
program.
It is. It's highly unfortunate. He's an exceptional physician, a good person, and has written textbooks, etc.
I know.
It's a big loss, but...
Gosh, he's over there today. Maybe I better go call him when I go back there. Anyway, that will be sad if we do, because these guys have been delightful and they've had a good experience. In fact, I had them talking with our volunteer group. I don't know if some of you know that our volunteers supply our emergency department with stuffed animals for the children, patients that come in there, and it makes a big difference. And these residents came to talk to the volunteer group, and the one resident who was just delightful said, you know, I called my girlfriend the first day on the job here and told her, I'm happy. I'm finally happy being a doctor. And that was so heartwarming to hear. And the volunteers loved that. And they said that, you know, it's really a great experience for them here. They get to spend time with emergency room patients because they come out of Harborview where the volume is just incredible. And they really don't get a chance to talk to the patients like they do here. And they were saying that the stuffed animals are just like...
Well, they didn't benefit there. Some of them want to come back and practice here.
Well,
also,
that's the whole
Olivia
idea.
Was one of those. Was our first resident.
Yes, I know. That's the whole idea of this plan. So
hopefully we can stabilize that program.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll work on it. cancer care and infusion specialty services, you all know about that. The volumes are up in the clinic. Everything from infusions of antibiotics to the chemo, and we've added another infusion chair to handle the overflow days when those occur. Amber Anderson, an RN from our clinic, then joined the nursing staff in oncology, so she's helpful. And as Dr. Raich has included the mindfulness CDs for our patients, and we do provide those complementary therapy visits to patients in oncology while they're enduring long infusions. It's like therapies, massage and that kind of thing, and we added a new massage therapist during this reporting period, Polly Brown. It's free to the patient, and it's sponsored by donations to the oncology center by our volunteers and other people in the community. Nature and results of the quality initiatives, there are two PowerPoints included with your packet, which basically summarize during this reporting period the quality experience and the patient experience. And the quality results are put together by Raymond Bellamino, who is our infection control person from Bellingham. And you can read these PowerPoints for yourself. But just to highlight, the quality management system is a multidisciplinary quality management committee that provides oversight and mechanisms to achieve our objectives established in the plan and reports to the community governing board to drive accountability. So, you know, it starts out with monthly meetings with staff, reported on up to the board, an intense review of each event that is occurring to understand what happened and when to implement changes to improve patient care as the objective of this committee. Some of the quality measures that they manage are flu shots, patient safety events, healthcare associated infections, readmissions, falls, hospital acquired pressure injuries, patients flow, scan results from acute or hemorrhagic stroke, endoscopy measures, pain management, patient experience, the overall information that's on this other PowerPoint, outpatient diabetes scores, the HbA1c controls, and so clinical excellent initiatives such as the hospital-acquired pressure injuries, or the acronym HAPI, you might hear that. A lot of our staff is just getting some additional updated training on that. Catheter-associated urinary tract infections, or CODI. Central line-associated bloodstream infections, or CLABSI. These are acronyms that the clinical staff throws around all the time. C. diff, which is infection of your GI tract, and falls with serious harm. So these are always monitored, constantly monitored. And every patient has an audit of their record for these things if they're occurring with the patient. And then a regulatory update. We underwent surveys during this reporting period. Survey agencies reviewed systems and processes around patient care, infection prevention, quality management, staffing, and environment of care. And plans for improvement and mitigation measures were all approved, and improvement plans are on track and completed. That's the quality measures. Then we have patient experience indicators. We have a new patient experience manager. Her name is Jenny Westbury. She came out and met us all. She's delightful. We had Melissa Morrison doing that for a number of years. She's taken this over. This is a lot of data that you can review for yourself. If you have any questions, please call me. But basically, they review the emergency department, the clinic, and the inpatient through patient surveys, and I'm sure some of you have heard about our patient surveys. They're long and lengthy, and some people don't reply to them, but our emergency department gets high scores for patient satisfaction. P-Silen scores are above and beyond 95% of hospitals in the whole entire nation, and all are on the key indicators that make up the emergency department care experience. These totals are based on patient feedback on post-emergency department visit surveys. And so there's a lot of statistics and trending in there that you can see. Our inpatient experience scores, the biggest challenge with that is a lot of our patients are well in their 80s and over, maybe ill, probably don't fill out the patient experience scores or questionnaires when they get there. They say the biggest challenge for improving the care experience for our admitted patients is that we don't have a large enough admitted patient volume to adequately measure how we're doing to provide that care for admitted patients. So during this reported period, we only had 10 inpatient surveys to report on. We needed at least 30 return surveys to validate the data significantly for our inpatients. But from what we know, our inpatients, you know, appreciate their experience there. There's a Q3 and Q4, quarter three and quarter four patient experience kind of data thing, a dashboard thing of green and red and yellow. These show you down at the bottom kind of what the inpatient N size or the number of patients that were, you know, completed their surveys and ED patients and the Peace Health Medical Group clinic and such. Again, this is data you can look at on there, but ongoing. And then she ends her PowerPoint with just some excerpted family and patient comments from the surveys that are here for you to look at. Any question about the nature and results of quality initiatives for this reporting period?
Does this report come with a magnifying glass?
Yeah. Well, you should be able to open it if you get the thing. I don't know.
No,
you put it on the website, didn't you?
Yes,
all of this
it
is
on
the
website.
So you need the numbers are interested can open it up, print it out.
I have a question about the specialists.
Yes.
Do they have access to PIMC patient records, and or could they get it with a patient approval?
Yes, but they the specialists that are Peace Health Medical Group obviously share the same medical record. Dr. Olson's in private practice. Dr. Foist and Foist and Prinz are at Island Hospital. But yeah, if they need the record, they can get copies of the record for sure. And we do have copies of their OB records and stuff for our patients. So it's exchanged. But yeah, it's with patient consent, all record transfer. Okay, so that's it. And then the final thing is the financial viability of the operation. And what the finance department prepares for me is a 6-month period of, as the subsidy agreement mandates, it's emergency revenue and expense and family practice revenue and expense. The financial page starts out with the money's not yet received from the district from the subsidy agreement, which would be $500,000, you know, $511,294. Pam confirms that that's the number that has not yet been received. And then these are the revenues, total patient revenues, and total operating expenses for these two service lines, showing the EBITDA, it's called the earnings before interest, tax, and depreciation and amortization margin, and then the depreciation that's there, and then the overall gain or loss, which is a loss all across the board here. It subtotals a loss after the subsidy and operations of $451,578. So that's taking into consideration the subsidy, after the subsidy. And then the bottom, below that, are all other hospital services, like ancillary lab, x-ray, inpatient, and some of the other departments, oncology and that kind of thing, that are in here. And as you can see, that's a loss all the way down, other charity and uncompensated care. So the overall loss is almost $5 million during this reporting period.
Is that loss calculated on total billings or total receipts or contractual discounts?
Well, all of those things, contractuals. So it's what's not paid, what's
contractual.
Yeah.
And so do we have a ratio? The ratio of actual receipts divided by patient service to see how much you're losing per patient, apparently?
Well, per patient? I could get that information
for you. Well,
you
just take the great number. It's the number of patients per month.
Well, you're looking at the margin here. I mean, the margin is, well, there's kind of a conclusion of this summary here,
uh-huh,
where it says healthcare services covered by the subsidy, the charitable services of emergency department and physician, family medicine. The estimated 6-month loss without the subsidy
I'll tell you what, at the same time, I'm going to read this in detail, and I'll come back to you personally.
Okay, you should.
Get my answers.
If you want, and we can get it, but the message down here is that the negative margin of 14% with the subsidy, without the subsidy, that negative margin would be 20%, 20.3%. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things that factor into this is that in February, Medicare changed their payment rate that we receive per the cost reporting for critical access hospital, and that affected some of the Medicare reimbursement. And then also, you know, we can depreciate, when we first opened, we could depreciate quite a bit of the equipment in 2012, and now that ended, those 5 years of depreciation ended in November and December, and so those depreciation expenses can't be included. That would make that. Or I might mention that our payer mix is almost, well, for this reporting period, it's 56% Medicare. So that's 56% of all of these services, 15% of Medicaid, and that's an increase, and then 29% just commercial insurance. So our payer mix, of course, makes a difference, but Medicaid's our market. I mean, Medicare is our market out here, and Medicaid is growing. So.
This average age on this island is 57 years old.
I know.
So the losses from everything else and all the other items is, I mean, except for a very small amount, is all underpayment for Medicare and Medicaid.
Pretty much. And remember, this is our slow time of year. So we're hoping that you see in the next reporting period the revenue gain. I mean, just like any other business on this island, June, July, August, September, during tourist season is our time to make up some of the shortfall in the budget, so I'm hoping to see better next 6 months.
So we need more uneven bricks out at Roach Harbor?
Yeah.
So Beth, you mentioned that the CMS-based piece of reimbursement schedule, I'm getting tired, has changed.
I have a report you can make up.
No, thanks. Has that gone down?
Yeah,
reimbursement for CH is down.
The payment rate went down from Medicare in February, I didn't tell me why exactly, but the Medicare payment rates can go down, and then it did do that in February, so that went down, and then the depreciation advantage went away.
Yeah.
And this is our low, you know, reporting period for volumes. So.
So the bottom line for our community is that, in the face of a subsidy for 6 months of $511,000, you folks suffer a loss of 10 times that.
I know.
10
times. So we really need the subsidy.
So we really need to thank you.
For uncompensated care.
The other thing caught my eye, having been one of the co-chairs of putting together a piece of IMS, so going back so many, many years, it was basically your introduction to the CAH concept and also Charlie Anderson's vision of having local cancer care related services.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that the number specific to the Cancer Care and Specialty Center has gone up from 2014 from 470 visits to 909. That's a phenomenal increase, I think. And, and every year it seems to be going up and up and up and up.
Yeah,
so good for you.
People prefer to have those services there for all kinds of obvious reasons, even if they need like a series of antibiotic injections or infusions. You know, they literally would have to leave the island for that if they couldn't have the infusion every single day. So it's a real gift.
And your volunteer service of 300 is very supportive for those folks too, isn't it?
Yes, they do. They buy them everything. Their chemo care kits and their
hats.
They knit them a million hats and quilts, and they're really behind the oncology patients 100%.
Thank you, Beth. Warren, you had something to say.
So if I was out in the community and I heard you were losing so much money, one of my issues would be, is this sustainable? Is it sustainable? But the other issue there is, this is also a loss leader for the Bellingham Hospital that gets referrals, and does this unit get credit for what goes over there in the big system of the sisters?
Well, I don't know what about credit, but, you know, we're a one big hospital system, so we share in all the gain and loss together. So if we're doing well out here, that's great for us, but we have our seasonal differences that everyone mm-hmm. understands, the same in any other, in the critical access hospital in Ketchikan and down in Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in rural communities. They don't make it up in volume, so you have to make it up with the right payer mix and things like that. But this is why critical access is in a rural community, because you do serve large numbers of Medicare and Medicaid, and our Medicaid is growing. And a lot of people are using the emergency department, you know, as primary care, so as the old thing goes. So we doing our best, and here we are with all these services.
Is the overall system making money?
I don't know that. I can find out. Okay. I think so.
I trust the sisters' view of the world, but all of a sudden, if everyone's losing money and there's hospitals closing across this country, 4,000 in the last 8 years.
We're not in any unique situation with hospital systems as they go. Yeah. I think overall, the financial health is pretty good, but again, that's why we want to do more about community outreach and prevention and things like that, so that we use the hospital facility appropriately. And have the right staffing. You know, staffing's an issue, as you know, and all those other things. So.
Yep.
There are actually state-based discrepancies, Warren. Mm-hmm. So Oregon does very, very well financially. Washington State, not so well. Alaska, not so well. Plus, so on balance, I think they're floating the boat. But there is, within the system, subsidies as well.
And just like everybody else, you know, we have our seasonal challenges with staffing, and then we have to hire additional people. So if you have specific questions about financial viability in the hospital, please write them down and give them to me, and I'll send them on to the actual CFO of the whole system that will know and be able to answer for you.
I wanted to give kudos to this part, the Venture Coalition. This is nice work.
I know. They're up next.
Well, no, wait a second.
Oh,
you can't run out the door yet. Because your ferry's not for an hour and a half, 2 hours, right?
Oh, I know.
That's number one. Number two, we need to have questions or comments from the rest of the commissioners.
Okay.
And then we need to perhaps proffer a motion to pay you the money. Otherwise, you don't get the money.
That's right, and I can't leave until I know that.
That's right.
Okay. Any questions from the commissioners for me?
Great job.
Yes, as usual.
Thank you.
My only question is, and it's a process question, how thick this packet was today. Is there a way we can get it a couple days earlier? Because, you know, sometimes...
It wasn't for without trying. As I said, I had it all done like weeks ago. But I have to get the approval of all the departments in the system, particularly the finance department, and they were the last report, and I didn't get it till Friday.
Can we get the others?
You could, I guess, but
get the others earlier, and then we just have to do the finances. I think I'd do a better job as
you
a commissioner
could.
Having time to read
I'll
those.
I'll bring that suggestion up.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the financial component's always Johnny come lately, right? Yeah.
Well, I know they got to keep looking at it and over and over.
Yeah.
All kinds of people have to approve it before I get it.
So may I make a motion?
Well, maybe. Yeah.
So that she can leave.
Oh, that's
so
okay.
Or, no.
I'm not nervous.
I would like to make a motion to release the funds to PIMC consistent with the subsidy agreement.
Second.
Any discussion? No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
I guess now you can leave, correct? Thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again.
Take care, Beth.